Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, and it is the 2nd of August in the year 2006. And it's you and me again tonight, folks. Alan was doing another broadcast. He got his dates mixed up, thought he was going to do it Monday. And right now he's in the midst of taping another show. So what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to pick up the book from the book that I was sharing with you last night, God's Genes and Consciousness. The subtitle of this book is Intervention in Human History. And if you didn't take the number of the publisher, I'll give it to you right now if you want to grab a pen. I've been rereading again, trying to figure out where I wanted to start tonight. And every place I want to start to give you the background leading up to what I really wanted to do, it would just take the whole hour. And it occurred to me tonight that if I was doing Monday through Thursday again, as we did on shortwave, I'd have probably been sharing excerpts from this book the entire 4 nights. The 800 number for the publisher is 766-8009. It's God's Genes and Consciousness. And the author is Paul Von Ward. And first of all, our spiritual message tonight, once again, this is from the quotes from the Course in Miracles. This is from the text on page 50. It says, of your ego, you can do nothing to save yourself or others, but of your spirit, you can do everything for the salvation of both. And according to A Course in Miracles, you know, when you think about it, have you ever wondered about that word named ego? You know, if I could just get my ego out of the way and overcome my ego. I don't think that we're going to, quote, overcome anything. Well, yes. That's what I mean. I overcome, maybe to understand. And according to the Course in Miracles, and this made a lot of sense to me again, our ego is nothing more than, in a sense, a compartmentalized portion of our brain that has a false identity of who we really are. In other words, that we are not merely human beings experiencing in the physical third dimensional realm. We are spiritual beings of our Father Creator, the source of all that is. And so when we can get out of the way, when we can get that out of the way with all of that goes along with ego, fear and pride and low self-esteem, all of the mistaken views we have of who we are. I've had people say to me, well, the Lord knows, I'm just a weak sinner. So, you know, when I do stuff that isn't okay, well, I'm saved because I take Jesus as my Savior and I know that Jesus died for my sins, so I'm going to heaven. And what we do when we make a statement like that is we relinquish responsibility for our choices, for our actions. Exactly what we do. And it is a mistaken view of our identity, of who we truly are. That's what the ego is. And if we can have that aside, and maybe that's what it means when it says let go and let God, is to give up all our preconceived notions and give up our preconceived ideas of who we are, unless we accept and recognize that we are the perfect creation of our Creator. Unless we can somehow have that moved aside, let go, let God, go within, and discover who we truly are. I'm going to not do this tonight like I did last night. I think I talked for 20 minutes. The author, as I was reading today, he went back into history. He talked about the missing link, folks, in this physical world, the human, the Homo sapiens sapien, how many hundreds of thousands of years that there was a form of, quote, mankind, if you would, on this planet Earth. And then suddenly there was Homo sapiens sapien. They called it the Big Boom about 10,000 years ago. And that's what they refer to as the missing link. And he talked about how it was before intervention of the species that was here. And in fact, he refers to the Golden Age. Alan Watt has referred to that. And when we talked about the system that we struggle under today, I asked him at one point, was there ever a time when man lived free and lived naturally? He said, yes. That was when they were in their tribal communities. We could go back millennia ago, probably 30,000 years ago, when they had an affinity, a connection, a conscious connection with not just this physical world, but the other dimensions, the other realms, and realized that there is a consciousness within all things. And there was nobody to tell them this, but it was by their own experiences, by their own life experiences. He went through that, and I was thinking I wanted to read that to you, but what I really wanted to get into is the blood type thing here. And I don't, any of you that are real long-time listeners will remember Alan talking about blood types. I'm going to start here at chapter 9. And hope that I can get into, it's a few pages, but I want to give you the background here. This is from chapter 9, beginning of chapter 9 of the book God, Genes, and Consciousness. The author says, millennia-old religious texts, that's T-E-X-T-S, and indigenous traditions claim that our human ancestors descended from essentially one mother and one father who had been created by the gods. When he uses the words gods here, it's a small g, and he somewhere else in this book explained that in the Old Testament, which the first five books of the Old Testament is the Torah, so it's, you know, the Christian Bible and the Talmudic Bible, the Jews, those who call themselves Jews, Elohim was referred to multiple gods. And my friend Jeff, whose father was a Jew, Jeff went to Hebrew school and was bar mitzvahed, etc. He said that, and this is what the author pointed out, Jehovah of the Old Testament was a personal, quote, God to some ancient people back there someplace maybe, and referred to him, and according to Jeff, the Torah literally admits this, that Jehovah was one of the, quote, Elohim, one of the many gods. That's with a small g. And the author continues here. He says, modern science now offers corroborating evidence for such claims. I'll read the first sentence again. Millennia-old religious texts and indigenous traditions claim that one human ancestor descended from essentially one mother and one father who had been created by the gods. Modern science now offers corroborating evidence for such claims. In the 1990s, several spectacular, quote, Adam and Eve stories based in DNA research hit the headlines. Teams of geneticists using mitochondrial and nuclear DNA regression techniques claimed to have identified a common father around 270,000 years ago and a common mother around 250,000 years ago for all current humans. Now, just think of that one statement. They're claiming there was one common father, one common mother, and yet we have how many colors and body types in this physical world right now, the red, yellow, white, black, brown, whatever. The author says, in a slight variation of having discovered Adam and Eve, some scientists claimed to have traced all humans back to a very few females. DNA studies and fossils suggested Caucasoids appeared outside of Africa around 100,000 years ago. Both fossil dates and genetic estimates suggest a new genetic type settled Southeast Asia and Australia around 6,000 years ago. In parentheses, oral traditions among the Aboriginals in Australia also allegedly date them to this period. Other parts of Asia and Europe were reportedly peopled by a different genetic type around 40,000 years ago. Later, DNA studies alleged current Europeans descended from a few hundred ancestors as late as 25,000 years ago. These dates roughly coincide with significant developments described in the Sumerian texts and metaphysical sources covered in part one of this book. All this suggests we should take more seriously the worldwide reports of advanced beings from the heavens creating humans. It raises the question, can DNA research help trace the origin and dispersion of human populations in ways that test the AB intervention hypothesis? He refers to this entire thing as a hypothesis. And for that, I respect, because there's no way I see, folks, that this can actually be proven. So basically, what this author is doing, and I have not checked out, I want you to know this, I have not checked out his resources that he quotes from, nor do I know the resources that he's using are even accurate. But I found this book, as I said last night, I found it very intriguing, and ever since I've been reading it, it's been in my mind to share some of this with you. So let me continue here. When I find my place, it raises the question, can DNA research help trace the origin and dispersion of human populations in ways that test the AB intervention hypothesis? AB being the advanced beings. While this debate cannot be resolved on the basis of the still rudimentary science of phylogenetic theory, several DNA studies seem relevant to the AB intervention hypothesis. A brief review of recent DNA research may help us understand its promise and limitations in reconstructing human history. For instance, the above-mentioned studies place Adam and Eve and the, quote, primal mothers in Africa at various times between 200,000 and 300,000 years ago. Unexpectedly, these dates coincide with the period inferred prior to the DNA studies from the Sumerian texts for the creation of Adamu, the workers, the workers. What are we today, folks? The workers, the worker bees? The fossil record, and then in parentheses he says, see chapter 8, the fossil records of that period shows Homo remains with the body and brain sizes of modern humans. And that's like Homo erectus or whatever it is, and Homo sapien, underscoring the importance of this point. Leading evolutionists agree that the basic gene pool and the human brain have not changed since the first appearance. The basic gene pool and the human brain have not changed since the first appearance of Homo sapien. Can mere coincidence explain how three DNA techniques and the fossil record all point to the same time, place, and process as Sumerian and metaphysical texts? In another instance of corresponding information, Genesis and Sumerian texts described in Chapter 3 appear to speak of two stages in human creation. First, they describe the forming of one creature at a time before several were created simultaneously. Then the Sumerians specifically reported the use of 14 advanced being females to carry to term additional hybrid zygotes, comprised of human ova fertilized by Anunnaki sperm. These stages are corroborated by the calculation of dates for Adam and Eve and the DNA family tree, suggesting a, quote, spontaneous emergence from a few females of a new species in genus Homo. Let's review the basis of such findings. Phylogenetic family trees. In the absence of measurable DNA from the early period of human origins, we must use surrogate techniques and attempts to tease out the hidden story. The development of phylogenetic trees, somewhat like a family tree of succeeding generations, assumes the greater the diversity within a group's DNA, the more ancient its origins. This makes it possible to construct a diagram of various groups, possessive groups, DNA profiles that places each group in chronological order. Using this process, native inhabitants of sub-Saharan Africa appear to represent the earliest group. You know, I've read that before, that the Africans claim to be the original man on this planet. In addition to the degrees of diversity, the presence of particular genes in certain groups and the latter's estimated ages can help us chart each group's history. Listen to this now. Two gene characteristics help identify the genetic links of current groups to earlier generations. One is the fact that MT, quote, DNA, that's mitochondrial DNA, can only be transmitted by the mother. And the other is that nuclear DNA is transmitted only through the male Y chromosome. Use of these two kinds of data led to the highly publicized discovery of the existence of, quote, Adam about 270,000 years ago and Eve about 250,000 years ago. Such studies reach a hypothesized cutoff in DNA branching where no more ancient generations are considered necessary to account for current humans. I'm skipping down here. He says, let's see what DNA studies say on the question of gaps and dates. In a seminal study, Jonathan Marks reported that he had discovered a founder effect, which indicates that only a small group of Homo sapiens gave birth to Homo sapiens sapiens around 200,000 years ago. The fossil records indicate they did not replace other Homo sapiens subspecies, which continued to exist in parallel. Are you listening to that, folks? So in other words, we had a new species emerge, and the original species, or the current species at that time, continued to exist. again. Just a minute. He said, here we are. Hugh Ross, Ross has written, based on his mitochondrial DNA data, that Homo sapiens date from 150,000 years ago. These and other regression studies using mitochondrial DNA shows all modern humans appear to be genetically related, possibly as far back as 230,000 years. Africans, the oldest, are considered to have been clearly well established between 130,000 and 80,000 BP, before the present era. The next oldest seems to be Caucasoid, Middle Eastern types, dating from about 100,000 years ago. The next oldest are believed to have been Central Asians, dating between 73,000 and 56,000 years ago. Next, such estimates suggest, came the Europeans between 50,000 and 40,000 years ago. One study suggests that maybe there were two dispersals from Africa, an Asian one 50,000 years ago and a later European one, period. Another mitochondrial DNA studied by Brian Sykes of Oxford University suggests most people in Europe descended from seven women, parentheses, daughters of Eve, in quotes, as far back as 45,000 years ago. Okay, I'm going to jump down again. Despite such odds, let me check the time here, folks. I'm not hearing the break music. Okay, we've got about 5-6 minutes. I just don't want to be talking when the commercial comes on. I'm going to jump down here. He says, despite such obvious variations in dates, the rate of all these estimated genetic splits marks a dramatic departure from the 2 to 4% per million year mutation rate geneticists have calculated for microevolution. What he's saying is that all of this happened very quickly as compared to the what he calls microevolution of hominid, we call maybe mankind on this planet. All these changes were too significant and happened too quickly to have been the result of random mutations in the nuclei of human cells followed by selective interbreeding. Such rapid diversification is more compatible, listen, with deliberate genetic intervention than the laissez-faire route assumed for natural evolution. In addition to the so-called DNA family tree, other genetic studies relating to more recent stages of human development may also support the A-B intervention scenario. If you just tuned in, if you weren't listening last night, the author of this book, God's Genes and Consciousness, Paul von Ward, the A-B refers to advanced beings, advanced being intervention scenario. One area of interesting research has to do with the dating and geographical placement of various subspecies, races, blood types, and ethnic distributions. This, folks, is what had me want to share this book with you, because as I said last night, the question that has been in my mind ever since I can ever remember is, how did all the different colors, the different races, the different body types build structure, the structure of the human body. How did so many different ones wind up here on planet Earth? And that's exactly what he's saying. I'm going to read that again. One area of interesting research has to do with dating and geographical placement of various subspecies, races, blood types, and ethnic distributions. While this data cannot prove the theory of human hybridization with advanced beings, it provides independent commentary on a timeline for advanced being human events drawn from historical, legendary, and metaphysical sources. What is race? The word race has come to have many connotations. A species, parentheses, as the human race, a genetically distinct group within a species, as the Ainu in Japan, a different skin color, as black, white, red, and yellow, or a cultural homogeneity, as in Europeans. Whatever the origin of racial differences, current distributions of DNA show that variations other than race more logically divide humans into distinctive groups, and no known purebred human race remains. No known, quote, purebred human races remain. Distributions of DNA variations sampled by researchers across racial lines generally show wider ranges within a particular group than the average variations between different races, while skin color has been shown to relate to the interaction of ultraviolet light and the body's need for vitamin D. And then in parentheses, he says, light skin helps people produce more vitamin D in areas with weaker ultraviolet light. We produce vitamin D, by the way, folks, for any of you who aren't aware of this, by the sunlight on the skin. Isn't that interesting? And that's why it's important that we do get some sun, and maybe in the wintertime, or if you're a person that works indoors all day, to have a good multiple vitamin mineral supplement with vitamin D in it. Okay, subspecies, I'm going to skip down again. The genetic timeline developed by the phylogenetic tree approach shows that different races appeared much too quickly, almost bursting upon the scene, for that process to work. Given such leaps in human changes, AB intervention may offer as reasonable a basis for some of the unexplained and recent appearances of subspecies, races, or genotypes as any other theory. We've already mentioned the coincidence of the Caucasoid's appearance with the reported widespread intermarriages between Anunnaki and humans about 100,000 years ago. And remember in the Old Testament where it says the sons of God looked down upon the daughters of man and saw that they were fair and came into them, took them to wife, they bred, and it said there were giants in the earth at that time. It looks to me like it's time for us to take a break, folks. For some reason, I'm not hearing the music, the warning music that lets me know when a break is going to happen. So I'm going to stop reading here. And there we go. There it is. All right, so we are going to take a break here. And when we come back, I'm going to get into the blood type thing. As I mentioned to you earlier, in the beginning of the broadcast, when Alan Watt first started coming on with us, he talked about the different blood types. But yet there's no explanation of where the different blood types came from, unless we would say, oh, well, it was genetic engineering. So we'll be back right after this, and then we're going to get into what it was I've been wanting to share with you for such a long time. We'll be right back.
Sometimes our .com server goes down, so don't forget, we have a backup, FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
All right, folks, we're back here with you. Once again, I'm looking at some of my highlighted areas in this book. The subtitle of this paragraph is called Subspecies or Genotypes. He says, given such leaps in human change... Oh, I've already read that one. I'm going to go up to the top of the next page. As we'll see in Chapter 11... Noah was reportedly warned of the impending flood by the AB god, Enki. The ark he built to Enki's specifications is believed to have beached on Mount Ararat, not far from the prehistoric site of Catal Huyuk, associated with early post-cataclysmic agriculture. Following the flood, the Semitic, which he has in parentheses Near East, Hamitic, African, and Aryan or Indo-European, Anatolia and Caucasus. These genotypes, pure families of skin and eye color, hair and body types, are believed to have appeared almost overnight in historical terms. These genotypes have long been associated with Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, is that how you pronounce it? Their genetic legacies produced the three centers of post-cataclysmic Western civilization along the Nile, Tigris, Euphrates, and Indus River valleys. Each was part of the reputed Anunnaki-based civilization. Could they have resulted from gene mixing by AB lords to mark their respective proteges? No simple explanation exists for the quick appearance of these three genotypes. If distinctive genotypes correlate with areas of hegemony by different ABs, then human genetic history could be a reflection of the history of AB colonization. Did the establishment of a different AB kingdom in Central or East Asia before 50,000 BP result in BP means before the present era, before the present of today, 50,000 years ago? Did the establishment of a different AB kingdom in Central or East Asia before 50,000 years ago result in genes that led to a separate Mongol genotype? Or did the Mongols represent migration to Asia out of one of the reportedly lost AB colonies? The culture reflects an Asian perspective on ABs, unlike the Sumerian. Within what people consider to be the Negroid race today, we find genotypes so different that we need an extraordinary explanation for such an obviously complex history. Two-thirds of black Africans belong to one group that further subdivides into four groups: Kung, Western Pygmy, Senegalese, and Eastern Pygmy, and the two pygmy groups quite different from each other. The remaining third is more similar to certain European and Asian groups in all respects except skin color, which we have seen is not a racial characteristic. Current DNA studies can only describe the variations. They cannot explain them. Current DNA studies can only describe the variations. They cannot explain them. Another intriguing example of a genotype that cuts across modern geographical divides includes some Amerinds, including the Navajo and certain Europeans. Some geneticists estimate this gene pool to have developed into an independent one between 12 and 36,000 years ago. Could they have been products of Atlantis or some other region genetically isolated for a long time from the areas we now call the cradle of civilization? Other such groupings, like the Lapps in northern Norway, Finland, and Arctic Russia, unrelated to other Europeans, raise the same issue. AB manipulation of human characteristics could have served one or more objectives: to help humans cope with changing environmental conditions, to mark the followers of one AB ruler or inhabitants of his or her kingdom for identification purposes, or to make humans more desirable as servants or sexual partners. And in parentheses, he says these last two interbreeding goals have been observed in recent behaviors by European colonials vis-a-vis their subjects and by human masters toward their slaves. Another objective could have been to enhance the level of human intelligence or increase conscious awareness of other dimensions. And he says, see comments later in this chapter. Now we're getting into blood types. Blood groups may be another phenomenon potentially related to the history of AB interactions with humans. Blood types cut across all racial lines. In fact, all current racial divisions are assumed to have preceded the divergence of type A from type O. The type O is the original blood type. I remember Alan saying that a long time ago. Type O means original. The appearance of type A seems to have resulted from a gene mutation rate for, listen to this folks, this is what I found so fascinating anyway. The appearance of type A blood seems to have resulted from a gene mutation rate 4 times faster than the common fruit fly. Thus, we need to seek explanations beyond random mutations, geography, diet, environment, and race to account for this. The appearance of type A blood seems to have resulted from a gene mutation rate 4 times faster than the common fruit fly. One hypothetical history from the medical field provides a timeline for our 4 major blood types. The dominant and oldest, type O, is associated with meat eaters. Oh, that's interesting. I've got that highlighted, and I didn't remember that. My, my. Type A is assumed to have appeared 15 to 25,000 years ago somewhere in Asia or the Middle East, associated with cultivated grains and other agricultural crops. Its highest percentages, type A, are among Western Europeans and their descendants. Type B is believed to have developed between 10 and 15,000 years ago in the Himalayan Highlands, currently Pakistan and India. Its highest numbers are in India, Japan, China, and Mongolia, and in Russia up to the Ural Mountains. And then he says, see earlier mention on the Mongol genotype and a different AB perspective. The Mongol, the Khazars, are a, according to what we have read, are a Turco-Mongolian race of people. And it really makes you wonder, doesn't it, folks? You know, those today who are known as, or who believe to be, or call themselves Jews, 90% of them today are not Semitic. They have nothing to do with, at least from what we understand, that Middle East, where it's supposed to be the Holy Land, where Israel now is today, that used to be Jerusalem. The Jews today, if the information in Arthur Kessler's book concern, you know, verifies this, Arthur Kessler being a Jew, that they were of Turco-Mongolian descent. And that's what he's saying here. Type B blood are in India, Japan, China, and Mongolia, and in Russia up to the Ural Mountains. And remember that the Khazars were there between the Caspian and the Black Seas. Type AB blood. Type AB blood is rare, found in less than 5% of the population, and apparently only came into existence 1,000 to 1,200 years ago. In the context of our AB intervention hypotheses, the appearance of type A appears to coincide with the migration to Europe of humans from advanced being colonies in the Fertile Crescent. In the Fertile Crescent, during the period from 30 to 15,000 years ago, plant dispersion patterns suggest these migrants also took agricultural samples from the AB colonies in the Fertile Crescent. Type B blood seems most likely to have occurred just after the cataclysm of 11,500 years ago, as AB's advanced beings rescued humans and created advanced being human city-states. And I want you to, folks, I read Emmanuel Balakovsky's book, Worlds in Collision, several years ago, and I shared some of it with our shortwave listeners. I don't even know if any of you listening are former shortwave listeners, because most of our shortwave listeners didn't have computers. But this cataclysm that the author here refers to was written about by Emmanuel Velikovsky, who himself was a Jew. And I found that, the book, I couldn't put the book down when I started reading it, Worlds in Collision. The book is not in print anymore, of course, but if you go to ABE Books and look for Worlds in Collision, you may be able to find it. So I'm going to start that paragraph over. Type B, that's the Mongols, India, Japan, China, and Mongolia. He says type B seems most likely to have occurred just after the cataclysm of 11,500 years ago, as advanced beings rescued humans and created AB human city-states. Historically, Jews and other non-Arab peoples in the Middle East have a higher than average type B percentage than the generally type O Arabic population around them. I found that fascinating. So the Semites would be the type O Arabic populations, and the Jews today, which are not Semites, most of them have the, according to this, have the type B, which is the Mongol, Mongolia, Chinese. And you know, in, I think it was, I cannot remember his name, Rabbi Rabinovich, in a speech that he gave. I think it was about 100 years ago. He said that we will be exposing our relation to China. That they were going to do away with the races, that the white race is going to disappear, and that they will eventually expose their connection with China. And I can remember in Arthur Koestler's book, The 13th Tribe, these are the times that, you know, a statement is made and it creates 1,000 questions. In the book, The 13th Tribe by Arthur Koestler, when the Khazarian chieftain decided to bring, quote, religion to the people there, and it was a huge, there were millions of them, of these Khazarians, Turco-Mongolians, according to Benjamin Friedman, that they were very barbaric, and so barbaric they were pushed out of Asia into that area between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. And now I've lost my train of thought. When I veer off like that and get myself into the cul-de-sacs, oh, I was talking about Arthur Koestler. What he said that intrigued me, in his book, The 13th Tribe, when the Khazarian chieftain decided to adopt Talmudism as their religion, he made the statement that the Kagan, which is the king, the Khazarian king, he said only a Jew could become a Kagan. And he said the Kagan was chosen from the imperial race, and the capital I and capital R is what was written for imperial race. And as a footnote, it related back to China. These are the types of things that as you read them, these connections start popping off in your mind. And that, you know, Alan, I asked Alan Watt one time how many books he had read. He said thousands. And I said, how do you know that the books you read are true? And Alan said, there's no book that you're going to read that's going to have all the truth in it. But if you read enough and you see the same thread running through several books from several different sources, you know that there's truth there. And this is what it seems to be connecting in my mind with these Khazars of today that call themselves Jews. And maybe there are some of you who find this as fascinating as I did. I don't know. But it seems to put a couple more puzzle pieces together. So I'll repeat that sentence. He said that historically Jews and other non-Arab peoples in the Middle East have a higher than average type B percentage than the generally type O Arabic population around them. Perhaps blood type, like other physical features, was a marker of identification for human groups related to particular advanced being regimes. Blood samples played a role in distinguishing Israelites from Egyptians when an angel was sent to kill the oldest sons of Egyptian families. He refers to the biblical story in Exodus. He said the concept of blood brothers permeate several traditional societies. The idea of blue blood associated with royal families, allegedly with divine rights, suggests a connection to an Anunnaki blood type. The book Holy Blood, Holy Grail develops this theme with regard to Christianity, but much more research is needed to illuminate the linkages only hinted at here. Some metaphysical or esoteric schools of thought accept the possibility of advanced being genetic intervention in human development, but have different interpretations of its purpose. Sources in chapters 1, 2, and 3, and references elsewhere in this book, portray contributions to humanity as advanced knowledge, physical refinements, technology and social innovations, and enhanced consciousness. Genetic changes of the type covered in this chapter, and perhaps others not so evident, may have been intended to increase the human capacity to understand and communicate with other levels of consciousness, including that of the AB donors. For instance, Carlos Suárez, a Spanish Kabbalist, believes that the creation of Adam may have involved genetic inserts that enlarged humanity's range of consciousness about more advanced realms. These ideas are not incompatible with the intimations of Sumerian and biblical texts. The presence of specific genes may also provide clues to AB contributions to our genetic heritage. For instance, the HLA gene, histocompatibility, appears to predate the period when early humans and apes lived in parallel, suggesting HLA is a part of the early humans' gene pool. On the other hand, scientists estimate the gene that writes hemoglobin appeared somewhat less than 100,000 years ago. I'm going to jump over here because we're almost out of time. I've got a place on the page here, bracketed. Various Judaic sources provide details describing the progeny of intercourse between angels and humans, which may offer further insight into some of the AB characteristics added to the human DNA pool. A fragment of the Book of Noah, discovered with the oldest known version of the Book of Enoch, an Ethiopian text, tells about a son, Noah, born to the wife of Lamech, son of Methuselah, who was thought to be fathered by an advanced being. In this version of the story, Enoch, who was Methuselah's father, was asked his opinion about whether Noah had an advanced being parent. Lamech had suspicions that his wife had been impregnated by one of the, quote, watchers, and wanted his father to check with Enoch, who was now living among the ABs. He said this is various Judaic sources, and he's got footnotes here, folks, that I won't go back into. The exchange between the two gives prima facie evidence that Noah was a hybrid. Methuselah told Enoch that Lamech had said his son was unlike man and resembling the gods, the sons of the God of heaven. Enoch responded by saying that in the time of his father, Jared, quote, some of the angels of heaven united themselves with women and had begotten children by them. The implication was that this family line carried with it the DNA of those, quote, angels. So even if Lamech, I don't know, I'm not pronouncing that properly, we'll call it Lamech, was the immediate biological father, he would have passed on the genes of the angels. What are some of these genes, or what features did they express? Lamech described his wife's son as having skin, quote, white as snow, yet red as the blooming of a rose. His hair was long, woolly, and white. His eyes were beautiful and bright. They lighted up the whole house. These are quotes. Enoch predicted Lamech's son Noah would be one of the, quote, giants on earth. Other texts underscore the advanced being lineage Enoch described for Noah, known as Zusudra or Sumerian, Atrahasis in Babylonian, and Utnapishtim in the Epic of Gilgamesh. All these sources agree that he was a demigod. Well, we've got about 3 minutes left, and I'm going to give you, once again, the phone number. Folks, if any of you are interested in getting this book, the publishers, I don't get anything out of doing this. As I told you last night, this book was sent to me by the publisher. There wasn't a bill with it. I didn't order the book. And there was no note as to why it was sent to me. But the name of the book is God's Genes and Consciousness, Non-Human Intervention in Human History. And the 800 number, if you would like to get a copy of this book, is 766-8009. And I found places in this book that made me question the author. Not that I think that everything that was written in here is a bunch of hogwash. To me, if it does nothing else, it gives room for some introspection as to where all of the different races came from. Why is it that people today, and you know, in the Old Testament, we are allotted, what is it, 70? Yet 70 years. And yet in the Old Testament, they lived for hundreds of years, folks. And I've wondered, have we been genetically modified to self-destruct at a certain point in time? I mean, if that's written in the Old Testament, who was it that knew this? These are the questions. I don't know about you, but those questions stay in my mind, and they rattle around. And when I read a book like this, it just gives me a little bit more food for thought. And this is why I wanted to share this with you. Next Wednesday night, Jim McCanny is going to be on with us. So you'll be missing Alan again, but he's doing a lot of other broadcasts elsewhere. And every radio show that he's on is on his website at cuttingthroughthematrix.org. So even if you miss him on Sweet Liberty, you can pick up dozens of shows that he's doing today at cuttingthroughthematrix.org. Jim McCanny is a astrophysicist. I called him yesterday when, you know, because I was going to stand in for Darren. I did a lot of research on the storm that hit St. Louis. And what Jim told me on the phone was, he said, if you saw the weather patterns, it looked like a bead. It looked like a necklace of beads. Those storms came down probably in Canada, Minnesota, Michigan, just right down like a string of beads is what he said. And so Jim is going to be on with us next Wednesday. Darren will be back with you Monday and Tuesday, and do be sure to tune in. Folks, thanks for being here, and I hope you have a lovely week, and I will be back with you next Wednesday night. And so until then, may our Heavenly Father, Creator, bless you. We are blessed. And I suggest that we just need to open up and gratefully accept the blessings that continuously pour forth from our loving Creator. I'll see you next Wednesday. Good night, folks.
Record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cederstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we